and this is a special day for three reasons. Number one, it is Ash Wednesday, the most important day of the Lenten season as we begin Lent. Number two, it's Valentine's Day. That has not happened since the 1940s when Ash Wednesday and Valentine's is the same day. And I had to kind of rush over here, so I'm telling my wife, go buy herself some chocolates at Trader Joe's for Valentine's Day. But there's another third reason why this is an important day. It's about the only time I'm going to be taking 3 days in a row to talk about a specific subject. We're going to do it today on Insight Wednesday. We're going to do it tomorrow with Wes Reimnitz on Rumination Thursday. And we probably won't be taking calls on Open Mic Friday because it'll take 3 days to get through the material that we have prepared. And what is the topic for these 3 days? The topic is how evolution is very dangerous for the church. Now, I just so happened, as one of the members of my congregation for 28 years, I had was a Dr. John Klotz, who was an expert in creationism. And of course, I've read a lot of books about creation versus evolution. And there are other scholars we're going to be taking a look at as we go through these 3 days of things that I've kind of brought together. And we're going to be really examining why evolution is so dangerous for the church. We're going to have a couple of themes here. The first one is to show how dangerous evolution is. Then we're going to be talking about how evolution from a scientific point of view is starting to lose its allure. From a scientific point of view, it's just not credible. And then we're going to be taking a look as to, in my opinion, why a number of youth are leaving the church, I believe, is because of the teaching of evolution. So without further ado, let's kind of begin our teaching on creation versus evolution. Who would disagree that if you have a civilization, but you take God out of the thinking, you end up with nihilism? Nihilism, what does that mean? Well, nothing is true anymore. Everything is up to you. You can't imagine that if you take away the underpinnings that God exists, then you're going to have some real problems. And our youth have been brought up with the likes of people like Carl Sagan. He says, the universe made itself. God and creation are ancient superstitions. And we ourselves are no more than atoms whirling together briefly in a meaningless dance until the suns die and all is nothing again. Now, he was asked, well, is that all? Is there nothing in here but molecules? And he responded, some people find this idea somehow demeaning to human dignity. For myself, I find it elevating that our universe permits the evolution of molecular machines as intricate and subtle as we. Now, did you hear that sentence? That the universe permits the evolution. Since when is a universe a person permitting anything? This is really fascinating. We talk about the God of nature. That's really, without doubt, what evolutionists who really strongly believe in evolution are teaching. Within the scaffolding of these truths of evolution, then the soul's habitation cannot be safely built. You see, the biggest problem with the rejection of the necessity of God in creating the world is that morality is doomed as well. Nietzsche, a very famous writer, naivete as if morality could survive when the God who questions it is missing. Now, he kind of liked that. A lot of people are wondering, why are we becoming so immoral? I see a lot of television shows about detectives. I kind of enjoy that. And it's just amazing how many people end up sleeping with individuals who are not their spouses as if it means nothing. Now, it often ends up in murder or other terrible things. Women are being followed around now, and we'll be talking more about that as we get into this. But the fact of the matter is, if you allow evolution to exist and take God out of the picture, there is no view of morality anymore. In fact, Nietzsche, as he imagined evolution, ended up with a century of Hitlers and Stalins and their imitators, as well as those who now terrorize schools, subways, and neighborhoods. The liberation from Christian morality, as they put it, has brought in its wake wholesale butcheries of human beings, both born and unborn. We are teaching savagery and are naively appalled at the success of our instruction. You know, I just don't understand feminist women who are for abortion, and they're all upset when little children are dealt with by pedophiles, and they're angry about that. But then they go ahead and see nothing wrong with butchering their own children within their womb. I mean, that kind of shows that they have lost the foundation of true morality. You see, if there is no intelligent creator before whom you and I are responsible, then ethics is no more than a personal whim. And man has no more dignity or significance than cats or cactuses. Less, in fact, because cats and cactuses are blissfully unaware of their absurdity. Disposing of unwanted humans, in that case, is the same as exterminating roaches or bacteria. In fact, statements like murder is evil, or you shall not steal, they belong in the same class as I hate asparagus, or please pass the mayonnaise. It's said by A.G. Iyer, we have seen that sentences which simply express moral judgments do not say anything. They are pure expressions of feeling, and as such do not come under the category of truth and falsehood. And some time ago, I shared with you a conversation I had with an atheist and a gay person. And you'll recall that he didn't have any grounds why being gay was a proper thing to do. He just felt that way. And of course, he thought that I felt differently, but for him, that didn't make any difference. It's really interesting that if you talk to a lot of professors, when they have new students come in, the one thing that they almost all agree on is that everything is relative, and that good and evil reside in the eye of the beholder. In fact, Alan Bloom, in the closing of The American Mind says, there is one thing a professor can be absolutely certain of. Almost every student entering the university believes, or says he believes, that truth is relative. Now, what does that mean? It means there's no morality that is an object from God as to how we are to behave. It's really up to you. And this is part of the postmodern world, the bad part of it, where people are simply saying, well, this is how I feel. This comes about in religion also, where a lot of people leave the clear teachings of the Bible against, say, abortion, homosexuality, and they come up the idea with, well, these things are okay under certain circumstances. You know, it seems obvious to us that machines cannot throw themselves together by chance. But then neither can plants and animals. Any and all of which are vastly more complex than any machine that man has invented. William Paley argued that unlike a stone, a timepiece like a watch cannot be dismissed as having always been there. And certainly a watch that you wear on your wrist does not come about by way of natural processes. If you are holding a watch, you assume that a watchmaker must exist, even if none can be seen in the vicinity. Plants and animals are even more obviously the result of deliberate designs. Professor Menton from Washington University, a creationist, did a video on the human eye, and it exhibits a great degree of complexity and precision than even the crude mechanical counterparts that we call telescopes. Philosophy, notably in the person of David Hume, have begun to dissolve all established certainties in a flood of systematic doubt. Christian truth and even the very existence of God were not to be exempt from the rising tide of skepticism. And it was Archdeacon William Paley who was able to dry back the waters to some degree. And he used the bright science itself to do that. In fact, the vital question of God's existence seems settled once and for all on the basis of solid scientific evidence. This was Paley's measurable achievement until one man came into existence. And probably never in the history of thought did he change things to such a great magnitude. And that man was Charles Darwin. His book, Origin of Species, burst like a bombshell in the 1850s. In fact, 1859. A lot of people don't realize this, that evolution was not something that Charles Darwin made up, invented, or thought of first. No. In fact, you can find it in Greece prior to Socrates. In fact, Darwin's grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, and others had offered evolutionary schemes, but they didn't have the convincing evidence. And what did Charles Darwin do? He provided a plausible way of how evolution might have occurred, and it's referred to as natural selection. We need to understand this. This is Darwin's understanding, and there's two steps to this. First, it is clear that the offspring of biological organism always differ at least a little from parents and from each other. So a son or a daughter, they have other characteristics that perhaps the father and mother do not have. Now, some of these variations, Darwin said, and this is the second point, fits better in the environment than does others. Thus, he thought that those organisms with the most advantageous features will tend to win out in the struggle for food and life over other organisms that are less well adapted to their surrounding. So Darwin taught that over millions of years, by a gradual accumulation of tiny changes selected because of their struggle for survival, nature has produced all the wide variety of living organisms that we know of today. Now, it does appear that their complex parts and organs give the impression that there's an intelligent plan or design behind it. But Darwin said, no, that's an illusion. Blind nature selection by itself, unaided by God or anything else, did it all. Simply by relentlessly eliminating nature's failures over millions of years. Now, why should KFUO, a theological station, be talking about Darwin? The problem is Darwin's proposal has far reaches beyond biology or even science itself. And this is what I believe a lot of youth are coming to the conclusion. If Darwin is right, he has successfully gotten rid of any intellectual necessity for God. Now, I want to say that again. The problem with evolution is that if Darwin is right, there's no need for God. There's no need for a creator. Because by means of natural selection, nature itself has taken care of the need for God. In fact, they have argued that Darwin's achievement is more philosophical than scientific. What he was able to do was to shift the whole of biology from a theistic, that is a creationist point of view, into a non-theistic, that is an evolutionary frame of reference. What Darwin did, he took God out of nature, if not out of reality, as effectively as does atheism. In the Western world, Darwin won the day, largely on the strength of his cultural appeal. Why? Because people wanted to be liberated from traditional religious constraints. See, by nature, man is sinful. See, this is a huge difference between evolution and creationism. Evolution, and you see this on television programs and stories all the time, that here you have a person who's cheating on his wife, and then the woman he's cheating with, her boyfriend murders him. But after he's murdered, people say, oh, he was such a wonderful and good man. Took, you know, care of things. He was a man of integrity. See, this is evolution. That man is basically good. That's not the point of view of Christianity. There's a television program, a new thing. It's on every week on Monday nights. It's called The Alien. And it's about detectives trying to figure out why young boys are being murdered in terrible ways. Well, the doctor who's taking a look at all this made this point. And it was so good. I'm quoting it directly. This is from the Alien, the movie. He says, "I believe we all possess the raw material required to do horrible acts. We just need the right or wrong combination of events to make the raw material combustible." That's probably one of the best summaries of why Jesus Christ had to come. It's called original sin. The raw material required to do horrible acts. Do you think that Nazi soldiers were kind of raised that way to put people in gas ovens? No. They learned that. But when they had a leader who encouraged them to do that, and they agreed with the leader, as they began to do that, they didn't think it was wrong. Because they have within themselves what we call original sin. This is why so many apparently good works that people do aren't good works at all from God's point of view. Because if they're an unbeliever, they are done out of self-desire, self-interest. This is a huge difference, and this is the main point I want to make for today, between evolution thought that basically thinks human beings are good, and Christianity that teaches and reveals that men are not good. Darwin was seen as having driven the last nail into the coffin of God. Natural selection, which was Darwinian evolution, had finished off natural theology, where you could look in the world and say, there must be a God. What Darwin did, he removed the whole idea of God as a creator of organisms from the sphere of rational discussion. Before Darwin, you could take a look at the human eye and say it is beautifully adapted. It has obviously been designed for a purpose. Design means a designer, and therefore there must have been a supernatural designer. What Darwin did with natural selection is he saw to it that no supernatural designer was needed, since from his point of view, natural selection could account for any known form of life. There was no room for supernatural agency in its evolution. So, why even at this time do we have a majority of Americans who do not believe in evolution? And that's what we're going to be getting into tomorrow. Because the Darwinian doctrine was doomed to decay. And it wasn't on the basis of theology, but it was on the basis of the scientific landscape that has really shown that Darwinian evolution is really quite impossible. That's what we're going to be looking at tomorrow with Wes Reimnitz. As those who want to be atheistic on the basis of evolution are going to be in for a surprise. Because proper science makes it very clear that Darwinian evolution and natural selection is a joke. And it's on the basis of a law of science. And we'll explain that more tomorrow. And then we'll get into the idea of how we can help our young people come to a better understanding of Christianity and get rid of these evolutionary thoughts in their minds, which appears to be facts on the basis of what they're learning in high school, college, and maybe even grade school. I'm Tom Baker. you're listening to Law and Gospel. We've got two more days on this, and we'll be explaining also where we're getting more of this material from. And we're going to be using Wes Reimnitz tomorrow, who's going to have some ideas on a certain law of thermodynamics. I'm going to have him explain that. I'm Tom Baker. See you tomorrow. God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel each weekday at this time on Worldwide KFUO. For a contribution to the program, make your check payable to Law and Gospel and mail it to Pastor Tom Baker, Post Office Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri 63132. You can call toll-free at 1-877-267-1962 or email Law and Gospel at lawandgospel101.com. Views and opinions expressed on Worldwide KFUO may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. If you'd like to comment on programs or topics heard on Worldwide KFUO, write us at KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can also leave a question or comment on our comment line at 314-996-1542. We are the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.